Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Where you gonna run to? All on that day.
Hello and welcome to The Breakdown, brought to you by The Nation Magazine and TheNation.com. I'm Chris Hayes, Washington editor of The Nation. Each week here on The Breakdown, we take your questions via Twitter at Chris L. Hayes or via email at TheBreakdown@TheNation.com. The way it works is this. You send us questions about what's perplexing you this week in Washington, and we try to break it down.
Will I run to the rock? Please hide me, I run to the rock. Please hide me, I run to the rock. Please hide me, Lord.
Hello, welcome back to The Breakdown, Week 59, Episode 59 in a Collector Series. So this week's question comes from Zoe Bridges Curry. She's the Press Secretary for American Rights at Work, which is a labor organization. And she writes in to prompt us to cover an issue that her organization is quite interested in, which is the National Labor Relations Board, which was created by the Wagner Act back during the New Deal, oversees enforcement and rulings on labor law in this country. They just had a ruling around the decision by Boeing, the airplane producing company, to relocate a plant from Washington State to South Carolina. And this, unlike most NLRB rulings, has gotten a lot of publicity, particularly among conservatives and Republicans who are outraged over the decision. And given the fact that it's flared up a bit and there's been some coverage, I thought that we would try to sort of understand what the ruling was, what its origins are, what its implications are. And so for this week, we have as a guest Catherine Fisk. She is a founding faculty member and Chancellor's Professor of Law at the University of California, Irvine, and she's a nationally recognized expert on labor relations, served on the SEIU Standards and Ethics Commission, author of numerous books, including most recently, Labor Law in the Contemporary Workplace. Catherine, thanks for joining us on The Breakdown.
It's my pleasure.
Okay, so maybe let's start with what exactly did the NLRB do, and what were they doing it in response to?
Well, first, it's important to point out the Boeing case is not actually a ruling yet.
Yes.
It was a decision of the general counsel of the agency, who acts like the district attorney with respect to labor law. The general counsel is to labor law as the district attorney is to criminal law.
Gotcha.
With the decision of the general counsel to issue a complaint, which is like issuing an indictment. It's the decision to go forward with the case. The case will then be heard by an administrative law judge, which is like a trial judge.
Yep.
There will be evidence presented by the general counsel acting as prosecutor. There will be evidence presented by the Boeing company's lawyers acting as the defense. And then the administrative law judge will decide. So we have no ruling. We have a decision to prosecute a case.
Great. That's a great clarification. And to extend the analogy, what exactly is the crime, quote unquote, that Boeing is being indicted for, so to speak?
The complaint alleges that Boeing decided to transfer work from its facility in Washington State to a facility in South Carolina to retaliate against the Washington employees for having exercised their statutory right to strike and to engage in other concerted activity for mutual aid and protection. So it's a retaliation claim.
I see. So the workforce in their Washington plant is unionized. They've had strikes recently, right? Maybe more than one in the last several years?
Yes, there's been more than one over the last 20 years.
Right. And they've decided to move the manufacturer of this particular line, I think it's the 787, from this part of Washington, which has a unionized workforce, which has struck, to South Carolina, which of course doesn't have unions. Right to work, I guess, is the propagandistic phrase with which it's used to describe. And so when you say retaliation, what do you mean by retaliation? Is that actually barred under the law?
Yes. Employees have a statutory right under Section 7 of the National Labor Relations Act to engage in concerted activity for mutual aid and protection, which includes the right to form a union, to join an existing union, to picket, to strike. And they also have rights to refuse to engage in any of that behavior. So the employees have the statutory right to unionize and to strike, to bargain collectively. And when the employer retaliates against them, for exercising their statutory right, the employer violates the law. And that's the allegation here.
Now, when you say retaliate, that retaliation that is barred by law, and the law that bars it is the original Wagner Act, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, that which passed in 1935, is that right?
Correct.
Right. So the 1935 Wagner Act, which creates the NLRB, basically creates collective bargaining in this country as, you know, as is currently legally protected, etc. When you say retaliation, what forms can that take? I mean, I guess I always think of retaliation. What's sort of novel about this case is I think of retaliation being workers come in and they start to organize and, the boss fires them. And that's sort of a clear case. But is there precedent for this kind of moving of production facilities in response to strikes as constituting retaliation?
Yes, there is. A whole series of cases going back to the 1940s and the 1950s involved, just like this case, allegations that the employer told a group of workers that because they had either decided to form a union or because they had gone on strike or because they had engaged in other statutorily protected activity, that it was going to eliminate their jobs and move that work to a different factory. In the classic form, it was closing factories in the industrialized Northeast and moving those jobs to the then unindustrialized Southeast. Mm-hmm. So that happened with textile manufacturing moving out of Massachusetts, Connecticut, New York, Rhode Island to North and South Carolina. And it's been illegal for as long as the National Labor Relations Act has existed. Because if you want to intimidate employees to keep them from exercising their rights, there's no better way to do that than to say, if you strike, I'll fire you. Or, phrased differently, if you strike, I'll simply close the factory, which will result in you being laid off, right, and move those jobs to some other place and give them to a group of employees who aren't going to exercise their statutory rights.
Now, what's interesting here is that the smoking gun, as it were, the evidence, comes from the CEO of Boeing, am I right?
That's correct.
Who gave an interview in which it seemed that he more or less admitted this is why they were doing it.
Right.
And he said something like, I forget what he said exactly, but something like, we can't have work stoppages every 3 years, and that's why we're moving to South Carolina.
Right.
So what's fascinating to me about this is that it seems like, just in terms of sort of statutory interpretation and enforcement, what's fascinating here is that it seems like the problem is that he admitted doing what basically all of corporate America has been doing for a very long time, as you note. I mean, moving from the North to the South to escape unions is a long-standing practice and tradition. Is it like one of these things where if you articulate what is implied, it suddenly runs afoul of the law, but the practice itself is fine as long as everyone pretends that you're just locating to South Carolina because you like the weather?
Well, it depends on really why they're moving. It's perfectly fine to move from a high-wage labor market to a low-wage labor market in order to save labor costs. And so one way of understanding the movement of textile jobs from the Northeast to the Southeast, and then I might add from the Southeast to Mexico, Central America, and Asia, is moving to a lower-wage labor market. There's nothing illegal in that. What's different about this case is that the Boeing officials said, we're moving because you struck. Mm-hmm. At least that's what the allegation is right in the complaint. What the evidence will ultimately show when it's taken under oath is obviously what the hearing is about to find out. If the motive for the movement was labor costs are lower in South Carolina than they are in Washington because of the cost of living or whatever other factors affect labor costs, that would not be illegal under the National Labor Relations Act. What's illegal is moving in retaliation for the employees having exercised their statutory rights to strike.
Have you been surprised? This decision has precipitated quite a bit of outrage amongst conservatives, Republicans, particularly, perhaps not surprisingly, South Carolina Republicans who want those jobs. Jim DeMint accused the administration of, quote, acting like thugs. Nikki Haley, who's the governor of South Carolina, basically said when they hosted that Republican presidential debate, the first one, that everybody had to weigh in on this issue, that this was a kind of litmus test issue. Are you surprised by that, or is that kind of to be expected?
for a variety of political reasons, labor issues are red meat to the conservative right in the Republican Party and, to be honest, also to the progressive left in the Democratic Party. So fighting over labor issues is a form of symbolic politics in the U.S. that have come back over and over again. So I'm not surprised at all that this has become a major rallying cry among conservatives, because there is at the moment a whole concerted attack on labor unions generally. Think of the effort to eliminate collective bargaining in Wisconsin, Ohio, and other states. There is an attack on the agency that enforces labor rights. The conservatives in the House are conducting oversight hearings, attacking the National Labor Relations Board's operations in a variety of ways. There was a bill to completely defund the agency, which would be like repealing the statute. So this is symbolic politics driven by the fact that major supporters of Republicans are the Chamber of Commerce, the National Association of Manufacturers, et cetera, who think it's in their interest to eliminate collective bargaining, as well as those who would like to weaken unions because unions organize workers to vote and to vote in the interest of workers, and they support candidates who support workers' rights. So it's symbolic politics. And I think the Boeing case is really not that radical a case. There are cases including the Ladies Garments Workers Local 57 versus NLRB from 1967, the Houston Chronicle publishing case from 1954, the McLaughlin manufacturing case from the early 1970s, going way back in time, holding that closing factories or eliminating jobs or firing employees because they've exercised the right to strike is illegal under the National Labor Relations Act. And the allegations in the Boeing complaint are that that's what Boeing did. The law is not controversial here, and whether this case turns out to be controversial will really depend on the evidence. How much evidence was there that Boeing made the decision to move because of there having been strikes, and to intimidate the Washington State employees to get them to moderate their bargaining demands in the next round of collective bargaining? Or how much was this that they decided that labor costs in South Carolina were cheaper because it's cheaper to live in South Carolina than it is in Washington State? That's a really question of evidence. But there's nothing controversial about the law here, and the attack on the agency for enforcing the law is really misplaced.
Right, or even beginning the process of that law's enforcement.
Right.
Right. So that is tremendously clarifying, because there's been a response to the decision, particularly among the conservative press, that this is so, you know, this is just crazy and out of left field. And so it sounds like this is squarely within the law.
Yeah, and I think what makes this perhaps different, partly Boeing as a big company, partly the general counsel of Boeing is very well known in conservative circles. He was a conservative appointee on the United States Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit, Michael Luttig, and then he decided to retire from the bench.
Once he realized he was totally unconfirmable for SCOTUS.
One does not know what prompted him to step down, but he's well known in conservative circles. He's regarded, I believe, by many as a visionary within conservative circles. So when Michael Luttig says, you know, we're going to transfer this work from a unionized facility to a non-unionized facility in retaliation for employees having exercised their statutory rights, that gets a lot of attention because of who he is and because of who the company is. But other than that, there's nothing particularly remarkable about the case.
Catherine Fisk is a founding faculty member and Chancellor's Professor of Law at the University of California, Irvine. She's an expert on labor law, recently served on the SEIU Standards and Ethics Commission. Catherine, thanks so much for joining us on The Breakdown.
Thank you for having me.
The Breakdown is a weekly production of The Nation Magazine and TheNation.com. New audio casts are posted each Friday at TheNation.com and available on iTunes. The Breakdown was produced by Ryan Rafferty and yours truly. Senior producers at The Nation are Frank Reynolds and Emily Douglas. Questions, comments, and feedback should be sent to TheBreakdown@TheNation.com.
Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? We're gonna run to all on that day.